I'd like to go ahead and call to order this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. For the record, today is Tuesday, April 24th, 07, and members present are Senators Bundy, Davis, myself, Ellis, and Stevens. We have a full workload today. My staff is very excited about getting a lot of these bills processed and before us. He's referring to it as Hell Week in the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, but we'll all get through this together. The game plan for today is first to take up Senate Bill 120. You do not have your committee packets for that before you. I simply want to bring that up before us for the purpose of referring to a subcommittee. As I announced at a previous meeting, the game plan, I've been meeting with stakeholders, and the game plan is for the subcommittee to meet on Senate Bill 120 this Thursday, April 26th, in the Farron Camp Room. For a work session with all interested parties. Everyone's welcome. We will publicly notice this. All members of the committee and all stakeholders are welcome. That'll be from 4:30 to 5:30. It's an organizational meeting on the issue of unemployment insurance. Hope folks can bring their materials and their questions, and we'll get a work plan for that subcommittee on UI. I will chair the subcommittee. We're hoping some leadership from the various stakeholders will emerge in these meetings as well and try and work out a proposal to bring back to the committee at some point in the future. So are there any questions or comments about that? I do hope some other legislators will show up at the meeting as well. You're all welcome to join the subcommittee's work. So with that, Senate Bill 120, Unemployment Insurance, is referred to a subcommittee, and hope you can attend. Okay, let's move then to a bill, and you do have the folder for House Bill 118, prohibiting allowing minors to have alcohol. Mr. Pawlowski, if you could just give us a one or two sentence reminder of what the bill's all about. This is the second hearing on the bill. It has been before us. If you could just remind us of the issue we're dealing with and take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mike Pawlowski, and I'm an aide for Representative Meyer. The bill before you closes a gap in statute and provides another tool for law enforcement to deal with those parties where it's difficult or impossible to prove that a person is hosting or has furnished alcohol to an underage person, but now would enable them to assess a non-criminal violation for hosting a party for underage people.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Pawlowski. Comments or questions for the representative of the sponsor? I would note that there is a zero fiscal note accompanying the bill. And the bill moves on to which committee? Can you look that up for us? Okay, this is the time for committee deliberation or potential markup. It's a policy call. The bill goes on to Judiciary Committee following our action here. Okay, if there's no discussion or markup, I will entertain the will of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move this bill out with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay, if there's a motion before us, is there any discussion of the motion? Any objection to the motion? If not, without objection, the bill moves on to the next committee of referral, individual recommendations, and the accompanying fiscal note.
Thank you,
Mr. Pawlowski. Thanks for joining us. Okay, next before us is Senate Bill 124, Alaska Workforce Investment Board. This bill has been before us in the past as well. Is there a representative of the bill sponsor here? Okay, go ahead and try and find the bill sponsor. Dana. This might be a good time to remind everyone in the room with the cell phone to please make sure they're on vibrate. If we can't find the bill sponsor pretty quick, we will move on to the next item.
Control them all.
Yeah. Okay, is there anybody else on this board? Is it no? Okay. Mr. Gray, if you could join us, please. If you could state your name and your affiliation for the record, and just remind us of the subject before us in this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Gray. I'm staff to Senator Olson, the sponsor of Senate Bill 124. Initially, the bill was presented as a initially, the bill was had to do with funding for a Voc-Tech effort up in Nome. Subsequent to that, the Senate was approached by a number of interests to expand the bill's application and really take a broader look at the education needs of our workforce prior to any kind of a pipeline construction effort, and that it was time to look at that, trying to supply that need. And for that reason, your committee has looked to broaden the aspect of this Voc-Tech, and the Senator appreciates your efforts.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gray. Have you had a chance to look at Work Draft L, that committee substitute? I'm going to have Mr. Owen come and run us through it again, but have you had a chance?
Yes.
Okay, if you could just move right over there, Mr. Owen, if you could come to the table and run us through the highlights of the proposed committee substitute version L. Then we'll have a comment from Mr. Gray and see if there's anyone else to testify, and then I plan to take action today if it's the committee's wish. Mr. Owen?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Dana Owen. I'm an aide to Senator Ellis and a staff to this committee. The work draft that you have before you makes a significant change on page 2. All of the other provisions of the bill remain the same as the last version that you've seen. On page 2, we've changed some of the allocation scheme. The University of Alaska under this bill now gets 37%. The Galena project gets 3.5. Kotzebue is at 8.5. Alaska Vocational Technical Center will get 16. Northwestern Alaska Career and Technical Center, 3.5%. Southwest Alaska Vocational and Educational Center, 3.5%. Ute People's Learning Center, 8.5, the Delta Career Advancement Center, 3.5, and Alaska Works Partnership, 16%. The changes are have come about as a result of discussions with parties interested in each of these work centers. Our attempt was to find an equitable distribution that would not disadvantage any of the centers and would try to fairly distribute the monies.
Thank you, Mr. Owen. Any comments or questions? Senator Bundy?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm familiar with and have visited the University of Alaska's project, Galena, Kotzebue, and the Alaska Voc-Tech Center, and I noticed their reductions. What was the rationale that these other new places should get money taken away from the people who are already doing a successful job?
Mr. Owen?
Mr. Chairman, we have spoken both with the University of Alaska and the Alaska Works Partnership, and they are both supportive of this bill. They, again, the idea is that we don't disadvantage any of these organizations. None of these people will suffer a reduction in actual funding amounts. No one will lose money in effect under this.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Owen. Would your questions be better put? We have Paula Scavera from Department of Labor is available to answer any questions. And Mr. Andrews from Alaska Works as well.
Okay.
Would you like to pose questions to them?
Perhaps they could answer. I don't understand when you get 37% of the funds instead of 55, how you end up with less money. Because just assuming a bigger pot, perhaps.
Yes.
So you're not receiving all you could have received. You may not receive any less. You're just not getting all you could have received.
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly correct.
Well, all right. Thank you.
Okay. That's a more accurate way of stating it. Thank you, Mr. Owen. Mr. Gray, did you have any comment on the proposed committee substitute? Okay. Senator Stevens, any comments? I know you have a program in here.
You know, Chairman, would you mind a brief 2 or 3 minute break? I need to talk to my staff about this.
Oh, sure.
These numbers.
Sure. Sure, let's go ahead and I need a break as well, so let's go ahead and take
while we're having a break, could I ask you a question?
Sure.
Where did these numbers come from? Mm-hmm. Who decided this portion?
Well, nothing's been decided. It's a committee substitute
that decided because you have a CS before us for this proposal.
Correct.
So
correct.
Whose idea, who suggested that it be done in this manner? Or is anybody here to speak to or to say why they think this is the best way to go?
Well, there was input from Department of Labor, Alaska Works Partnership, the University of Alaska, to my staff, and I had a discussion with Senator Stevens, and so that's what's proposed.
And actually, I said you could go to break, and I still would discuss this with you, so you don't have to hold up if he wants to go and get the information, because I think it's important that he gets it.
Okay. We are in recess for 5 minutes. Mr. Andrews to come forward and share a little information to help the committee through this decision-making process. We also have Wendy Redmond from the university online, and she would like to say a word or two. So, Mr. Andrews, please go right ahead.
Thank you. I'm Mike Andrews. I'm the director of Alaska Works Partnership, Incorporated. Chairman Ellis, the one thing that wasn't stated earlier when we looked at the changes in allocations was that actually the technical vocational education fund is increased by 50% as a result of this legislation, and therefore the overall allocations change. The way the formula was arranged is there are no current training facility in TVEP that loses money or gets less money as a result. The university pretty much stays the same. I think AvTech increases and Western Alaska increases, COTSTech increases. So there isn't any loss of vocational education dollars to those facilities.
Okay. Any questions for Mike? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Redmond, are you there? Wendy Redmond?
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I just wanted to add my support to this CS for SB 124. We very much support getting more money into workforce training, and while there isn't any additional money for the university, the money that we have currently in workforce programs will not be reduced, and many of the partners that we work with, including Alaska Works and Kotzebue Tech and NACTech and all the others are partners with the university in the delivery of a lot of vocational training, so adding to their capacity I think will be a great help to the state as a whole. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Wendy. Senator Bundy has a question.
Yeah, hi, Wendy. Does that mean you couldn't have used more money if it was available?
Mr. Chairman, we certainly can. We have an operating budget request that has a lot of workforce training requests in it. We're also attempting through the AGEA bill to get some specific workforce training money that is more gas line related as well. So we're looking at all options.
Okay, and I think it's generous of you to support this bill, even though the bill's sponsor wouldn't vote for the university budget when it was on the floor the other day.
Wendy, thank you very much for your comments. We appreciate you being with us. Senator Stevens, do you care to make any comment on the version L before us?
No. Well, I guess yes.
Your question.
Simply, I was concerned about the division of dollars in the end. Since we are approaching time, we're going to need our workforce development even more. I'm pleased to see that the additional funding to each of these units and the beginning of some new ones. So I certainly support it.
Okay.
Appreciate your efforts question. To make it fair to all.
Your questions were answered. Good. Okay. I will at this time entertain a motion to adopt the version L as the committee substitute as the item before us.
So move, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any objection to the motion? If not, that is adopted as the item before us. Is there any further discussion of the legislation? I want to thank Mr. Owen for vetting a lot of different interests and input from folks and helping us get the mechanics together for this legislation. If there's no further discussion of the bill, I will entertain a motion to move it at this time with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move Senate Bill for CS for Senate Bill number 124 out of committee with individual recommendations and the advanced and the attached fiscal notes.
Okay. Is there any objection?
I'll object.
Senator Bundy.
If I might speak to my objection.
Certainly.
We've taken a number of very successful programs. I mean, I'm not arguing with the increased money, but I think we should reward success and diligence by giving them more money rather than siphoning some of potential money away and putting into new and unproven programs.
Is there any further discussion of the motion to move the bill? Hearing objection, I will ask for a roll call vote, please.
Senator Hoffman. Senator Bundy.
No.
Senator Davis.
Yes.
Senator Stevens.
Yes.
Senator Ellis.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much. The bill moves on to the next committee of referral, which is Senate Finance. Okay, the next item before us is Senate Bill 102, Mortgage Lending. And give me just a moment here to get my folder organized. Okay. As we're opening up our packets here for the mortgage lending bill, I just note that we are in receipt of a second letter from AARP. They've worked with Mr. Davis from Securities and Banking, and their concerns, I guess Mr. Darling had to go off to another meeting, but she let me know that oh, there she is, right there. I'm sorry. I'm not going to call you forward. I'm just going to try and expedite the process and say that the letter, we appreciate Mr. Davis talking to the folks from AARP and addressing their concerns. And so at this time, that organization, statewide organization, is in support of the legislation. This is the week that I am hoping to take action on this legislation if we possibly can. I guess it would probably be best to start with Mr. Davis coming up and joining us. Maybe you can report, Mr. Davis. The last time we spoke to you, you were about to have a conference call this past Monday, I believe, with the national organization, the outside firms like Countrywide and others. Can you report to us on that meeting and any progress that may or may not have been made?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mark Davis. I'm the director of the Division of Banking and Securities in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. We did have a meeting between division, local industry representative, and representatives from AFSA. And we continue to try to work on legislation that would please all parties. We did not come to an agreement. The difficulty I have is that they want to exempt the originators who work for an affiliate of a bank, and that would include a state bank. And at the present time, as the division director for state banks, I don't think that would be in the consumer's best interest. Right now, we regulate state bank mortgages, which I think is very beneficial. If we do this, a state bank could create an affiliate and avoid licensing its originators. I wanted to know then, I talked to them whether we could carve out an exemption for federal banks. But looking at the state statutes, I must preserve parity between the state and federal banks. That is, any statute we adopt must be equally fair to a state bank or a federal bank. So it doesn't look like to me like we can adopt language in the way they want to do it. However, I did understand, I think, more thoroughly some of their concerns. And I will certainly let them speak for themselves. But one thing voiced was having to comply with different education requirements in all 50 states. I checked with some of my fellow regulators. What they're doing is adopting internet-based testing. And there's a standardized test you can adopt and then have it made specific for your state, much like the multi-state bar exam. I think that would make it a lot easier on these out-of-state companies. And the proposal there is to have education. I've been told, of course, we can discipline them, but I don't want to discipline everybody. I also want them to be educated. Let me give you a quick example. We get complaints every month from young couples who have bought their first home in Alaska and who have gone to a company that is not familiar with Alaska law, and they do not tell them about Alaska Housing Finance Corporation's first-time home buyer program. Then they get told about it off my relative, and they go, boy, I could have saved a point, 2 points. What happened? They call us up, and we go, well, we don't regulate them, and the originators aren't educated on Alaska law. So that's a problem. We also know that certain outside companies are writing mortgages that have prepayment penalty clauses in them, which are not legal in this state. So I'm a proponent of education. On the other hand, I understand AFSA not wanting to have to comply with the 50 education requirements. So thinking through their list of licensing could be too expensive in all 50 states. For example, I think if you had 20 originators, that would cost you $5,000 for your originators to be licensed in Alaska per year. Some states have call center licensing, where they say, how many of you got, meet all the other requirements, we'll give you a single license for the call center, as long as everybody's in compliance. So I think a lot of these things that they're concerned with could actually be dealt not with an exemption, but by regulation, or perhaps a modification of the bill if absolutely necessary. It doesn't take place until July 1st, 2008 in its present form, and it wouldn't apply to the AFSA members until March 1st, 2009, the way it's written. We also checked with the Department of Financial Institutions in Washington State, which has adopted the AFSA language and does allow for exemptions. We were told that they are processing those exemptions, and they've received a couple thousand, and that the processing of the exemptions has become as onerous as probably doing the licensing. And they didn't provide in their statute, as we don't have in our statute, for a payment for processing those exemptions. So it cost them money. So that's another issue. So if you were going to process these exemptions, it might actually require another physical note. So trying to work through that from the department, I'm only speaking for myself, I would think that we should endeavor to pass the bill as is, but we should also be very careful in the regulatory package and also with if any amendments are necessary, not to target any part of the industry. That is, we don't want to put an untold regulatory burden on one part of the industry. We don't want to discriminate and say, oh, you guys are out of state, we're going to charge you more. That is not a good attitude for business. On the other hand, we want everyone to have education, want everyone to have background checks. Right now, we have people with felonies as mortgage originators. And last week on Friday, a mortgage originator pled guilty to 2 counts in federal court of serious crimes and will face serious time for that. So we have a problem, and this bill will correct that.
Comments or questions for Mr. Davis? Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a memo here, a written testimony from Alaska Association of Realtors, David Feakin, the chair. And in there it makes a statement that Division Banking receives as many as 50 complaints a week. I think last year we had a conversation where I asked the number of complaints you'd received and you were going to.
I think it's a little overstated. I think it's about 20. What we are getting is about 5 or 6 a week inquiries from mortgage companies that want to enter into the state, which is quite a few calls. And it's what they tell me, the people who answer the phone, is they get two reactions. When they say there's no licensing, some say great, and others say they don't want to come here. And the experience with payday lending has been that we've cut the loans down for the public with that bill substantially, and we've also had 30 new companies enter because it's now legal to do so, and we've exited 10 companies that couldn't comply with the statute. I think a similar thing will happen here. I actually think we'll get more out-of-state companies in the state once we have mortgage licensing, because I think some companies don't want to operate in an unlicensed atmosphere.
Senator Bundy, please continue.
And then the number of complaints a week on average over the last year would have been what?
Oh, probably 4 or 5. And they go to bait and switch, which is that they get down to the closing and the documents are different than promised. The complaint about not knowing about the programs like Alaska Housing Finance Corporation or knowing they could have worked with their native corporation, not being aware of the special programs, fees, switching fees. And then we had testimony before the House by the president of Prudential to continue in violation of RESPA, which is the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act of 1974. That act makes it illegal under federal law to tie in groups to a closing, to say you must use that entity or that entity, that entity. There's been testimony on the House side that that's occurring with some regularity in Alaska, which would already be illegal, but unfortunately there's no one to make that enforcement. The state of Maine Consumer Protection Section did a study that last summer, and recommended the best thing for state mortgaging to do is to adopt those federal standards into state law. That's exactly what this bill does.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Stevens?
Just ask for clarification, Mr. Davis. You mentioned native corporations. It's something I'm not aware of.
We would exempt South Central Mortgaging from this. Mm-hmm. They have programs. But you know, sometimes people should be referred out to those programs. Or like Alaska Housing Finance, first-time home buyer. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, but that doesn't, if you call a call center, the concern is do they have a list of what's available out there? But you know, those are complaints that aren't fraud. So we have two types of complaints. Some are people are not getting what they were promised. That's a big problem. But also, we want to have education so the originators can tell people what programs are out there to help them if they fall into certain categories.
Okay. I should note for the record that Senator Hoffman has joined the committee. Anything further for Mr. Davis? So, Mr. Davis, after you had your conference call with the AFSA folks, and upon reflection, you're recommending the original version of the bill that's before us.
I am, with the sensitivity to their concerns and with the understanding that I think we should make sure the regulatory burden is mm-hmm. evenly applied. Mm-hmm.
And so you believe if this bill were to become law that you would have all the statutory authority you would need to promulgate regulations to address some, if not all, of the concerns expressed by that national organization?
Mr. Chairman, I think having checked with some other states on the education, for example, which was a concern expressed by one AFSA member, I think we can work with that and make sure it's a test that's pretty similar to what they take in other tests. We can also, since it doesn't apply to all AFSA members because some of them don't operate in states where there's licensure, but in those states where there is licensure, we can offer reciprocity, you know, accept what they've already done. So there's a series of things we can do to act rationally, which is what you need your state government to do.
And can you run through one more time for the committee? You may have done this last time, but you've mentioned several times that you've been in touch with your fellow regulators from across the country. What do other states do in terms of regulating the members of AFSA?
There are differences. Mm-hmm. State of Washington and the state of Idaho have a language that's similar to what AFSA is proposing here, and they process exemptions. That is fairly new in Washington. It just took place January 1st, 2007, so the regulatory history is a little uncertain. Montana just passed a brand new statute that does not exempt them, and the originators are licensed. In a state like Georgia, they do not license originators. They make the mortgage broker or mortgage banker responsible for the originator. We're in favor of the division of originator licensing because that's the person who meets with the consumer. That's the person who sits down with them and makes the representations. And if that person is educated, then we'll do less enforcement. I mean, we only have so many enforcement dollars. People talk about enforcement, but you know, if I have to go to court, Department of Law is going to charge between $170,000 to $200,000 for that representation. So the best thing is to have originators who understand Alaska law, are sensitive to the needs of special communities, particularly minority communities, and are doing a good job. Then we don't have case law.
Okay. Anything further for Mr. Davis?
Chairman.
Senator Stevens?
So, Mr. Davis, I understand. I mean, this is not directly related to the bill here, but your intention is to return at some point to talk more about maybe a bill that would concern itself with consumer protection and predatory lending and those issues?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, very much so. When we looked at the landscape for Alaska law, we didn't have mortgage licensing. We didn't have money transmitter licensing, and that's going through perhaps with Senator Elton's help. But a lot of states have these statutes. 47, for example, have money transmitter statutes. Mm-hmm. So if we get some of those in line, then we need to have a predatory lending act, which most states have, to say, rather than just a simple old-fashioned usury law. That's all we have is an old usury law. And you can basically, in my legal opinion, drive a truck through it legally. And so we need to have one that focuses on certain predatory acts. You could have, for example, a legitimate reverse mortgage, and you could have a predatory reverse mortgage. And we need to watch. We need to have a statute with enforcement powers. We've looked at, for example, North Carolina is an example. The Department of Law has looked at that. I've talked to AARP, and I'm willing to talk to anybody else with examples.
So is that something we'll be seeing you or seeing a proposal from you next session or sometime during the interim?
It would be my intention to find a sponsor for next session. Mm-hmm. I think if we pass the bills we have now, that we'll be in a good shape to say that we need that. We have the Uniform Securities Act also to introduce, hopefully, next session, which would be the final piece. We have a 57-year-old Securities Act, which is way out of date.
And remind us of the past history of the mortgage lending bill. It's passed the Senate before, and it had was it a total exemption?
Different version. SB 272, mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, proposed licensing mortgage brokers and mortgage bankers. It was our intention then to come back with an originator licensing bill and break it into two parts. Mm-hmm. Over the summer, the industry decided to prepare a bill that would include all three. Mm-hmm. So that's why the bill appears differently. Yeah.
Okay, anything else for Mr. Davis? If not, thank you for being with us. We need to move on to Kevin Breland, followed by, Jim Smith. That's a different subject. Mr. Breland, good afternoon. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Kevin Breland, and I represent the Alaska Mortgage Bankers Association as its state president, and also I am a partner in residential mortgage in Anchorage, Alaska. I want to thank you for allowing me to testify today. I'm testifying in regards to Senate Bill 102 and the Alaska Mortgage Bankers Association and residential mortgage favors the passage of this bill. I'm a 21-year resident of Alaska, 19 years in Anchorage and 2 years out in the valley. I moved out there 2 years ago. I've been a mortgage loan officer for 28 years, 21 of them in the Anchorage market. I've been an active originator from day one. That's the only job I've ever performed, and I can tell you that in this bill, we've defined an originator, and that is exactly what I do every day. Mm-hmm. And every originator who operates as an originator in the state of Alaska should be doing exactly what that definition says. As I stated earlier, I'm currently president of Alaska Mortgage Bankers. We have approximately 80 members statewide. I also serve as vice chairman for the Predatory Lending Advisory Council, an advisory board for a statewide Don't Borrow Trouble Alaska campaign. Finally, I also serve on the board of directors and is the only representative from Alaska for the Real Estate Service Providers Council in Washington, D.C. RESPRO, as it's known, is a cross-industry national trade organization representing some 330-plus members of mortgage, real estate, title, appraisal, and vendor management companies nationwide. What RESPRO does is it watches local, state, and federal regulations and how they affect the particular industries. Senate Bill 102, as you know, is a much-needed piece of legislation. Alaska currently is the only state with no licensing requirements for mortgage companies and is one of the few states left that doesn't require any licensing for loan originators. Currently, there are 26 states that do require it, and that number continues to grow on an annual basis. In fact, mortgage originator licensing and registration has become such an important component against predatory lending that at the federal level, there was a bill introduced by Congressman Ney and Congressman Konjorski that was a co-sponsored bill, had 236 sponsors on it. It was a bipartisan bill, and in that bill it had a component for a nationwide mortgage originator national registry so that every originator that worked in the United States of America in all 50 states would have to be registered so they knew where we all were at all times. So this is a key component when you start looking at dealing with predatory lending practices. There are situations, unfortunately, in my industry where a loan officer, through either lack of education or just wanting to make more money, may engage in practices that are not legal and therefore put the company, the consumer, the real estate agent, and everyone else in jeopardy And in a lot of cases, these people are unaware that these practices are even going on. Senate Bill 102 provides the Alaska consumer with protection. Currently, when a consumer has a complaint or there's a hint of an illegal act, really the only recourse they have is to contact the Attorney General's office. And the Attorney General's office has limited resources. There's only so much they can do. And while they are effective in dealing with the cases that they can take, there are many cases that they can't. Under this bill, the Division of Banking is another regulatory arm that now gets an opportunity to look at what companies are doing and what originators are doing, and hopefully be able to fend off any predatory lending or any illegal acts that may be going on. As you know, Alaska enjoys a dual banking system. In our state, unlike some other states, we have the ability to go to a local state bank, and that bank can be just as competitive as a national bank because of the way our banking system is set up in the state. Under the AFSA, it's easy for others to say, but difficult for me, under their amendment, by adding the word affiliate, that would really start stripping away at the core of our dual banking system. And what it would do is it would allow state banks, and we have many state banks who engage in mortgage lending. They're very large mortgage lenders, wonderful competitors and good operators, but it would allow them to actually take their mortgage operations, move them out of the bank, put them into an affiliate, and now they're completely unregulated to do as they please. I don't believe that's what the intent should be, and I certainly don't believe that's how it should act. Buying a home is, for most people, the largest investment they'll ever make, and to have an unregulated act taking place with hundreds of thousands of dollars just seems unrealistic to me. This particular loophole is something that doesn't need to be in the bill and would just create more problems down the road, I believe. While I'm sensitive to the fact that some of these companies will have 200 or 300 originators that they would in fact have to license, out-of-state lenders should not receive privileges that in-state lenders don't get to have. The reality of it is residential mortgage has roughly 70 originators statewide. We're going to spend thousands of dollars licensing all of these originators, and we welcome this opportunity to do so. We want licensing for our originators, and we want licensing for the companies. We're one of the largest statewide lenders, and we only operate in the state of Alaska. We have branches in Juneau, Soldotna, Kodiak, Kenai, Anchorage, Eagle River, Wasilla, and Fairbanks. I don't think I left any out. I might have. I'll know when I get home. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned earlier, you can find the definitions to what an originator is in this bill, and it clearly defines it. But I would also like to draw your attention to page 36, lines 18 through 27, and you will find that this coalition, Alaska Mortgage Bankers Association, Alaska Association of Mortgage Brokers, also put into this bill language that does not require loan processors, loan underwriters, shipping departments, and clerical staff to be licensed under this bill. It is not the intent for all the support staff to be licensed. It is the intent for only the originators. And if someone gains financially from the origination of a loan, then they should be licensed. It's that simple. On any given day, I will personally receive up to 70 emails about refinancing my home. And in fact, today I've gotten about 34 so far. All of these offers come from unlicensed companies who operate out of state. I don't get a single email from anyone in the state. And these are unlicensed companies with unlicensed originators who don't know me, who know nothing of my personal situation, who know nothing of my employment situation, but will offer me unbelievable amounts of money, unbelievably low rates, and paying off all the debts that I have on the equity of my home. Yet they have no idea how much it's worth. It's amazing. I know that they can't do this, so therefore I don't respond to any of these. But I cannot even begin to imagine how many consumers in the state of Alaska respond to these emails on a daily basis. But the number is phenomenal. You would be surprised. As I mentioned earlier, Senate Bill 102 is a collaboration between the Mortgage Bankers Association and the Alaska Association of Mortgage Brokers. We put this bill together collectively, brought it to Juneau, to get it passed, asking for this regulation, asking for this level of consumer protection, and it is an industry-friendly bill that will promote competition, that doesn't bar anybody from competing in our state. We could have, as some states have, what they call brick-and-mortar regulation. That regulation is not in this bill. Anyone who wants to operate in the state of Alaska, whether they're going to be based in the state of Alaska or even have an office in the state of Alaska, that makes no mind. They can still do business in this state. And so it is a very competitive bill, and it opens the door and keeps that door open. So, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I would urge you to move this bill on and out of committee. Thank you very much.
Mr. Breland, thank you very much for making the effort to get to Juneau. We appreciate your testimony. Any questions or comments for this presenter? Senator Stevens.
I truly understand, Kevin, what will this do to your employees, people in your business? Will they be required to have additional training that they don't have right now and to be licensed? Are we talking about a major investment of these people in education, or is it a fairly limited amount of, we're talking about going over the internet?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, the short answer to that question is yes. It would require a sizable investment on our company for the continuing education. But one of the components that we have in here is if you notice, the education component has an education committee that consists of 7 members. The intent of this was for all of our companies. The Alaska Mortgage Bankers, for example, briefly has an association with the National Mortgage Bankers Association, and within that organization we have something called Campus MBA. And there's a lot of training programs within that we can submit to the state or to this education committee for approval. And by all means, they more than likely would be approved. The Alaska Association of Mortgage Brokers, so their national chapter, has the same thing. Countrywide has in-house training programs that they can submit for approval, GMAC. I mean, that was the intent of this, is to allow all of these education programs that already exist to just be submitted for approval so that we can utilize them for our continuing education. The competency test is going to be a test that basically anyone who's an originator of mortgage loans in the state of Alaska should be able to pass. And there is a provision in there that I affectionately call the Kevin provision that will allow me to take it more than once in case I fail it the first time. And the reality of it is, it's not going to be a difficult test, but it is a test nonetheless that gives some level of competency to the people that are talking to your family members about the purchase of a home. And there needs to be some level of competency that requires more than just, oh, I think today I'll be a mortgage originator and go out and find a job, and now you're doing loans. The education provision, although from a cost standpoint, initially will cost residential mortgage a fair amount of money, ongoing is a minimal amount of investment in our people, because what it will ultimately do, Senator Stevens, is it will make them better educated. It will allow them to have more knowledge of things that they may not currently understand. And the mortgage industry is extremely technical. There are a lot of factors that not everyone totally understands. I've been in it for 27 years or 28 years, and when I read a title policy, I do get confused sometimes. There are some complex documents. And sometimes I don't. It just depends on the nature of the complexity of the issue. Okay.
Thank you very much. I should note that we have some folks available to answer any questions there may be on Senate Bill 102. Roger Prince, State of Alaska, John Martin, Alaska Association of Mortgage Brokers, and Julia Koester of the Department of Law. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on this bill at this time? If not, what I'm going to do is ask the committee if there are any questions that you can think of now or between now and Thursday to please let me or my staff know what you might need at the next committee hearing to make a decision one way or another on this bill, whether to act on it Thursday or whether to hold it over for further consideration. This is the week for us to do Labor and Commerce Committee work on this bill. I would not want to send it forward to the Finance Committee without us having fully done our job here in our purview, our portfolio on this bill. Are there any comments or questions before we hold the bill over until Thursday and potential action at that time? If not, we will hold the bill over until Thursday. And next is Senate Bill 140. And Senator Elton, I appreciate you being with us. Sorry for the delay in getting to your bill. If you could just give your name for the record and present the bill, please. Mr. And the plan is to hold this over. We always hold bills over. So that would be the plan today, but please go ahead.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks. I found myself involved in several tutorials here today. I've kind of appreciated the opportunity to sit in with you. And a couple of times thought I'd like to vote on an issue. Having said that, I think the bill that's before you today is relatively straightforward. It's not a complex bill. I'm not going to repeat the sponsor statement, but I'll run very quickly through the provisions. The leave donation component of this bill kicks in only when a donor is selected as a potential donor in an individual case. Section 1 applies the provisions of this bill to private employers who employ more than 20 people, municipalities, and school districts. We worked with the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce and tried to address one of their concerns, and we did that by capping at 60 hours the leave donation that an employer had to grant. Sections 2 and 3 are part statutory cleanup and part technical. Section 4 is the part of the bill that applies the donor program to state employees. This provision of the bill, or part of the bill, says that the employer must provide 40 hours minimum, and then the caps will be done by the department in regulation. Section 5 is technical. I'm speaking now somewhat to a committee substitute that I think you have. One of the provisions that we had in Section 4 was that the bill applied to the Alaska Railroad Corporation. The potential committee substitute that you have creates a new section, Section 6, and applies the provisions to the Alaska Railroad there instead of combining it in with Number 4. I'd note that that a person who is selected as a potential donor and then becomes a donor, there is a certain amount of time that's required for that donor, and most often a component of the time is travel. If you're selected to be a donor, that's usually done in Seattle. They try to do it on Friday because there is a recovery time that is necessary after the donation is made, and so that recovery time is usually over the weekend, and then the donor is released. The bill attempts to do something, and that is to make it easier for a person to get on the registry. I mean, it removes an impediment that, you know, people don't have to sit back and say, well, if I am selected, what's this going to mean to me and my family if I am selected? Essentially what this means is most employees in the state of Alaska aren't going to have to take personal leave that could otherwise be spent with their family in Denali Park or traveling to see grandma and grandpa someplace else. It also, hopefully, this is kind of a two-step process. First, the decision to join a registry, and then the second decision comes. Nobody is forced, once they're on the registry, nobody is forced to donate. So it takes away one of those threshold questions, too. If they're selected, they get to make the same decision, that this is not going to, I'm going to be somewhat protected financially if, in fact, I decide to go through and say, yes, I will be a donor because we've got a good match. I just note, Mr. Chair, that last week we had a couple of faces. I mean, for me, this is a concept. And it's a concept that became semi-real to me, but it's still a concept because of the circumstances of a young child here in Juneau who benefited from a bone marrow donor who is out of state. This wouldn't have applied to that donor. But it it bumped me a little bit out of the conceptual phase and into the reality phase on just what happens, why it needs to happen, and why it's good state policy to encourage expansion of the registry and expansion of the pool of people who can become a donor. Last week we had the aunt of the young boy here, Aunt Andrea, and Grandma Andrea, two different people, and they would have been a much better face for this issue than I. And I'm sorry, the grandma is traveling and the aunt wasn't able to make it today. You will note that there are several fiscal notes, all of them from different departments of the state. All of them are zero fiscal notes. That, quite frankly, played into the decision that as sponsor I made to include private employers. A difficult decision. I mean, we don't generally like to extend a mandate to private employers. But after working with departments of the state and their understanding that the potential of a selection of one of their employees is minuscule, that was a decision the state employers came to, and that's why they came up with a zero fiscal note. We don't think this will have much of an impact at all on private employers, and those most private employers, I think, with or without this bill, would probably do the right thing for a person who goes on to become a donor. But the chances of that happening and the chances of that affecting a private employer are relatively remote. It would be wrong for me to say that there is no chance, because clearly one of the things that we hope to accomplish is to expand the registry, expand the pool of donors. I will also note that I have with me staff member Paula Cadiente, who I don't think there are any embarrassing questions that you can ask about this bill, but there might be some difficult questions that you can ask. And if there are difficult ones that you ask, I might ask her to come and join me, because she's much more familiar with the details, and she has worked very closely with people around the state. I just will finish, Mr. Chair, by noting that some facts and figures from the National Marrow Donor Program include one that I think gets to this issue also. And one of the facts that they have is lack of financial resources can delay donor searches or limit opportunities for post-transplant care. For patients who qualify for financial assistance, the donor program offers the Marrow Foundation Patient Assistance Program. In 2006, more than 1,000 requests for funds were approved, and more than $4 million were made available to patients in need. A nonprofit group recognizes that there is a financial impact on donors, and that's what this bill does. And it's the right thing to do. Just as there is a program that the nonprofit group. Does. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll try and answer any questions that you or the members might have.
Senator Elton, thank you for bringing the bill before us. Are there questions or comments for the sponsor? Senator Stevens.
Mr. Chairman, I just would appreciate Senator Elton giving me an example of, having retired from the university, if this were in effect and I was with the university, this would be a full week that the university would pick up my salary. Does it really take a full week? Including travel and including recovery. And the second question I'd ask you is that why are the difference between a public employer provides 40 hours of leave, not less than, a public employer provides not more than 16 or less than 40. Why aren't those the same? So two questions.
Yeah, and I'll answer the second one first. What we've done is we've tried to respond to a concern by the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce, who represents a lot of private employers. And their concern was that there could be circumstances in which the employee would say, well, I need this, I need that, and it would grow into a bigger issue, a bigger financial impact on the employer. What we did with the public employees is we left some latitude so that those people who write the regulations can all we're doing is we're saying no less than 40, which is what we said with the private employer, but we did cap the private employee, and that was to try and address the concern that they have that there might be a growing exposure, financial exposure for them. I anticipate that in the regulatory process there's going to be a cap also. The first question was, does it really take that long? It doesn't take long to join the registry. I mean, that's a simple swab of the cheek. And so getting onto the registry doesn't take any time at all. And this bill does not provide for any leave for getting onto the registry. Once you're selected, there are a series of tests that can be made. And the first is kind of a, and I'm looking over my shoulder now at my staff person. The first is a test of blood. That can often be done, especially if you're in an urban area, that can often be done in a very simple way. But once you're selected, there is time that's needed. I mean, for example, if you live in an urban area, you need to take leave to catch a plane and fly to Seattle. That you then go through additional testing. The harvest, I don't know if that's the technical term or not, the harvest then occurs, and then there is time in the hospital in which the hospital is, because of medical practices, wants to keep you there and make sure that everything went well and that you didn't suffer any consequences. So, yeah, it can add up to time, and a large part of that is because of travel time.
Senator Bundy.
Thank you. And I certainly agree that we ought to do what we could to encourage people to be organ, tissue, or bone marrow donors. And it's probably difficult to know. The boy you referenced is one of the few that I know of that have received bone marrow transplants. But we're also telling a private employer that you have to give up a week and a half of salary, potential week and a half of salary. Some of our state employees, that could be $5,000, $6,000, $8,000 that they're having to give up. It's really an unfunded mandate. And if it is such a small occurrence, I'm wondering why you haven't written in here that the state would reimburse private enterprise, which would even be more encouraging, perhaps, for the expense that they would incur for granting this leave.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, certainly that's a policy call that could be made by the committee. And that does provide some protection. I guess the only caution would be that I think that in most cases, private employers, whether they employ more than 20 or less than 20, in most cases, I think that the private employee is going to say, is going to bend over backwards to try and accommodate and protect from a financial hit their employee. And so the only caution would be that if you do provide for a reimbursement by the state to the employee, is that my guess is that every employer would apply for reimbursement. And that, of course, has some cost implications. But again, it would be a policy call of the committee. That would be my only caution.
I should note that Mr. Denny DeWitt, representing National Federation of Independent Business, was with us before. He had a appointment outside of the building. He was available just to answer questions, and maybe he can be with us at the next committee hearing. Should also note that Frank Bailey from Department of Administration Personnel Division is available if there are any questions for him. Anything further for Senator Elton? If not, Ms. Cadiente, could we have you change chairs with your trade chairs with your boss there, please?
Thanks for your attention, Mr.
Thank you
Chair,
again,
members of the committee.
There is a proposed CS. It just came to folks. That's another reason we're holding the bill over. The CS just got to us from the drafter. I understand they're backed up over there, is the way it is at this time of the year. So members really haven't had this committee substitute. So I'm going to ask Ms. Cadiente to walk us through it, give us the highlights. We'll hold the bill over and give people time to digest the new CS before we entertain adopting it. Ms. Cadiente?
My name is Paula Cadiente, staff to Senator Kim Elton. And the changes in the CS are in Section 1, page 2, lines 1 through 9, It's changing the definition of employee to a person who works for a political subdivision of the state or a private employer, and it also defines political subdivision. On page 4, line 3, no, section 4, page 3, line 8, it deletes reference to the Alaska Railroad Corporation as it's not subject to Title 39. And on page 4, section 6, adds a new section in Title 42 to include employees of the Alaska Railroad Corporation.
Okay. Ms. Cadiente, so the changes in the definition there on page 2 of employee and political subdivision are just for the purposes of this statute change, just for bone marrow. We're not changing the definitions anywhere else in state.
That's correct.
Just for this purpose.
Just for this purpose.
Okay. And how do you characterize the change? I mean, it's you're making the definition of employee more expansive than the original bill?
Actually, it's narrower
it's
than the
more
original
restrictive.
Bill.
Okay.
In the original bill, an employee meant a public or private employer.
Okay. And then how would you characterize the change of the definition of political subdivision? Which direction are you going there?
It's just defining it as a municipality and its subdivisions, as most political subdivisions are defined.
Okay. Anything else? Those are the highlights?
Those are the highlights.
Okay. Cliff notes. Any questions for Ms. Cadiente? If not, thank you very much. Those are pretty straightforward changes, but I'll stick to the original plan, and we'll just entertain adopting that committee substitute at the next hearing, which is likely to be, we'll try and do it Thursday. Thank you, Senator. Anything further on this legislation? If not, let's go ahead and hold over Senate Bill 140 for further consideration. The next item, was there anyone else here who wanted to testify on that bill? Okay. If not, thank you, Alaska Railroad. Okay, let's turn to Senate Bill 155, Regulation of Water and Wastewater Utilities. Okay. And my understanding is that Mr. Mark Primo of the Anchorage Water and Wastewater Utilities will make the presentation of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, distinguished committee members, my name is Mark Primo, and I'm the general manager of the Anchorage Water and Wastewater Utility, which is commonly referred to as AWWU. I'm testifying in support of Senate Bill 155. This bill would exempt AWWU from economic regulation by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska and place it in the same status of every other municipality-owned water and wastewater utility in Alaska except one, Pelican. First, some background information. AWWU is two separate utilities, both subject to economic and service area regulations by the RCA. The water utility, a former City of Anchorage utility, has been under RCA regulations since inception of APUC in 1970. The Anchorage sewer utility, which was formerly owned by the Greater Anchorage Area Borough, was voluntarily submitted to the APUC for regulation in 1971. An umbrella organization, AWWU, was formed in 1975 following unification of the borough and the city of the municipality of Anchorage. The municipality of Anchorage in 1991 petitioned the then APUC to exempt AWWU and its electric utility from regulation. The commission split evenly by a 2-2 vote on the question of exempting the electrical utility in AWWU. The opinion of the commissioners opposing self-regulation cited competition by the municipality's electrical utility and telephone utility with other utilities as the primary reason why AWWU should remain regulated by the state. No commissioner suggested then or has since suggested that competition between water and wastewater was present, nor is there any competition there today. Also, the telephone utility is no longer owned by the City of Anchorage. The House of Representatives previously approved House Bill 515 and House Bill 108. Both of these bills would have exempted AWWU from economic regulation by the RCA. The Senate did not act on either bill. House Bill 108 included a requirement from the House that the municipality of Anchorage create an AWW authority with a board of directors that reports directly to the municipal assembly to provide oversight of AWW and remove AWW from under the mayor of Anchorage. In September 2005, the municipality of Anchorage created the AWW authority with a 7-member board of directors which are approved by the assembly and serve 5-year overlapping terms. 5 of the 7 board members must be customers of AWW, and 4 must be experts in the respective fields of engineering, business, political health, and law. A supermajority, 5 of the 7, must be AWW customers, thereby ensuring a strong level of consumer input into decision-making. The work of the board of directors is written in the municipal code by assembly ordinance passed in September 2005. The board is empowered to recommend rates to be charged to the utility and its customers. Code requires that rate making follow standard industry practices of developing revenue requirements on the basis of true and documented costs. Public hearings for proposed rates are required before board approval, and public hearings are required, again by the municipal assembly, level prior to the current practice of filing tariff adjustments with the RCA. We know of no other utility in the country that faces 3 tiers of public approval process prior to the establishment of new rates. With the board of directors in place, the RCA approval process becomes redundant and valueless. Why does the municipality of Anchorage desire exemption from RCA regulation? The current RCA regulation process and procedures are slow and expensive. From 1993 to 2003, AWW filed only minor housekeeping and procedural matters with the RCA and never requested a rate increase. Yet, AWW ratepayers have paid approximately $2.8 million in regulatory assessments to the RCA during this period as part of every monthly bill. Currently, annual cost to ratepayers for regulatory commission charges amount to more than $600,000. However, the greater cost to AWW and its customers is in the form of cost repairing filings and regulatory lag. The cost of staff, consultants, and attorneys currently exceed $700,000 per year over and above the $600,000 in fees to the RCA. A typical tariff rate adjustment case takes a minimum of 15 months and requires a preparation of thousands of pages of filing, responses to discovery questions, testimony, exhibits to adjudicate the case before the commission. History and present events show that local regulation is faster, less structured, and more economical. Secondarily, the current RCA regulations and procedures are now non-responsive to local needs. The RCA process was designed for private utilities and not entirely appropriate for municipal utilities. The RCA process is a very structured and adversarial process that is not consumer-friendly. The RCA is not accountable to Anchorage residents, the Municipal Assembly, and the Authority Board of Directors, and are more responsive to local needs and are directly accountable to the ratepayers who are served by these utilities. The customers are municipal voters. Public hearings are now required by code to be held on both the new authority board and the municipal assembly in all rate matters. The public hearings are non-adversarial and much more consumer-friendly. I ask for the committee's support of Senate Bill 155. Self-regulation has worked effectively across the nation and other Alaskan communities than in Anchorage. Anchorage has regulated its own public utilities for many more years than have state regulators. The municipality of Anchorage has a proven track record of effectively regulating the Port of Anchorage, Merrill Field, and Solway Services, and are all financially strong, highly reputable enterprises that provide excellent customer service. For nearly 20 years, ratepayers have provided AWW, for nearly 20 years, ratepayers have benefited as AWW has reduced staff positions and labor expenses by leveraging technology and improving business processes, while at the same time increasing spending on system repairs and rehabilitation. In 1987, AWW employed 339 people on staff for 84,000 customers, both water and sewer. Today, we serve over 110,000 accounts with a staff of 266 individuals. This has all been done without direction or assistance or value added from the RCA. Over the years, the Assembly has made sound decisions in the oversight of AWW and other municipally owned utilities, including such decisions as the creation of the AWW Authority Board to specifically address governance of the utility with focused local expertise and consumer interests in mind. In conclusion, the passage of Senate Bill 155 provides for local regulation of municipal water and wastewater utilities, and facilitates the proper local regulation of AWWU authority like other utilities across Alaska and the rest of the nation. It will also facilitate the most efficient and effective operation and management of the AWWU authority. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to testify.
Mr. Primo, thank you for your presentation today. We have about 11 more minutes before we adjourn the committee. The bill will be held over, as I announced previously, but we want to get to Mr. Calvin Butch West. And I should note that Mr. Mark Johnson, RCA Commissioner, is online for questions, if there are any, along with Mr. Rich Gazaway, Hearing Examiner with the RCA, available for questions. Mr. West?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, distinguished committee members. My name is Calvin West. I am the chairman of the Anchorage Water and Wastewater Authority Board. You'll probably notice some similarities in my testimony to Mr. Primo's since we have compared some notes here. I am testifying in support of Senate Bill 155. This bill will exempt the Anchorage Water and Wastewater Utility, commonly referred to as AWWU, from economic regulation by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. This action will allow AWWU to operate like every other municipally owned water and or wastewater utility in Alaska, except for the city of Pelican, which voluntarily opted for economic regulation. Some history is necessary to understand why AWWU is economically regulated. Currently, AWWU is two separate utilities, both subject to economic and service area regulation by the RCA. The water utility, a former City of Anchorage utility, has been under economic regulation since the inception of the APUC in 1970 because of competition with other local utilities. The Anchorage Shore utility, which was established by the Greater Anchorage Area Borough, and the borough voluntarily submitted to the APUC for economic regulation in 1971 to facilitate the creation of the utility. In 1975, following unification of the borough and city into the municipality of Anchorage, the two utilities were organized into a single operation forming AWWU. The current status today, in September of 2005, the Municipal Assembly created the AWWU Authority with a seven-member board of directors to provide governance and oversight of the utilities. This action transferred responsibility for guidance and direction of AWWU from the mayor's office to the authority board. Board members are approved by the assembly and serve five-year overlapping terms. Five of the seven board members must be customers of AWWU, and four must be experts in the respective fields of engineering, business, public health, and law. Since five of the seven board members must be AWWU customers, a strong level of customer input is ensured in the decision-making process. Oversight of AWWU and the Authority Board is provided by the Municipal Assembly in three key areas. One, appointment of board members. Two, approval of changes in the tariffs, including rates. And three, approval of debt. Through Municipal Code, the Board is empowered to recommend rates charged for utility services. The Municipal Code requires that rate-making follows standard industry practice. Public hearings before the Board are required for new proposed rates prior to Board approval. Board-approved rates are then submitted to the Municipal Assembly, and hearings are again required prior to Assembly approval. Following Assembly approval, the current practice is the filing of tariff adjustments with the RCA. We know of no other utility in the United States that has three tiers of public approval prior to establishment of new rates. It is important to notice that initiation of this legislation, allowing AWWU to become economically self-regulated, emanates from the board and is endorsed by the Municipal Assembly. While Mayor Bengich may also embrace the concept of self-regulation, he has not expressed his opinion to the board. Some key points to consider regarding economic self-regulation for AWWU. One, no other municipally owned utility in the United States has three tiers of public governance and oversight. Two, the seven-member AWWU Authority Board, comprised of at least five AWWU customers, is more responsive to the needs of the utilities and its customers than a statewide board appointed to oversee a number of utilities throughout the state. Three, the Municipal Assembly, elected by citizens of the municipality, is more responsive to the citizens of the municipality and the customers of AWWU than a board appointed by the state. The reasons that brought economic regulation of the water and wastewater utilities are no longer valid. The water utility does not compete with other adjacent utilities, and the wastewater utility is now well established and accepted by the community. 5. The current RCA regulation process and procedures are slow and expensive. The annual cost to AWW ratepayers for regulatory commission charges amount to more than $600,000 a year. The cost of staff, consultants, and attorneys currently exceeds $7,000 per year for rate case filings. A typical rate adjustment case takes a minimum of 15 months to complete. And number 6, current RCA regulations and procedures are non-responsive to local needs for municipally owned utilities. It is designed to regulate privately owned utilities. In conclusion, the passage of Senate Bill 155 provides for local regulation of Anchorage's water and wastewater utilities. It facilitates the proper local regulation of the AWW authority, like other utilities across Alaska and the rest of the nation. It will also facilitate the most efficient and effective operation and management of the AWW authority. I ask for the committee's support of Senate Bill 155. Thank you.
Mr. West, thank you for your time today. We appreciate your testimony. I want to hurry forward now and get Virginia Rush on the line. Ms. Rush, if you're there, please go ahead. We have about 4 minutes left.
Okay. Yes.
And we are in receipt of your letter. All committee members are receiving it right now.
All right. Chair Ellis and committee members, I am here representing AARP today. AARP is a consumer advocacy organization that's taken a great interest in utility rates. AARP opposes this bill, as we have opposed the bill in the last two sessions that did not pass. And the reason for that is that the consumer protection that the RCA provides for the people who are customers is being removed by this bill. Now, for 23 years, I served as an assistant attorney general for the state, and for about 14 of those years, I was assigned to the regulatory commission. And so I have a great deal of experiences with the RCA's expertise in utility rate making and its processes. It's not my intent today to review exactly what was in my letter. I would rather respond to the arguments that you've just heard from Mr. Primo and Mr. West, which I think are generally surface statements that do not bear the focus of a careful light. Mr. Primo and Mr. West say that the board that has been established and the Anchorage Assembly adequately do the job that the RCA does. But the RCA is an independent judicial type agency that is given the responsibility of protecting consumers by assuring that the rates they pay are just and reasonable. And they do that through a rate-making process, which Mr. Primo has described as adversarial and not consumer-friendly. But in fact, let me tell you what that process is. It's that a utility files a rate case with the cost justification for the rates it wants. And then a state-funded consumer organization, which is now in the Attorney General's office, has a chance to audit and carefully examine the cost justification for those rates. It files a report, and then to the extent there is a disagreement between the utility and the AG as consumer advocate, there is a hearing to for the independent judicial body that the RCA represents to decide those issues. Now, AARP has also participated in a couple of rate cases because of its concern for consumer rates. Let me compare that with the process that AWWU proposes, as I understand it. There are consumer hearings, they said, before the board, and I believe that means that any citizen can come in and talk for 3 or 5 minutes without the opportunity to audit or have professional expertise to look at those costs. The board is not independent like the RCA. It is the board. It's just like the board of NSTAR might be. It's the number of people who are in charge of running that utility. Do they take an independent consumer protection look at the rates they themselves have proposed? Well, no. The Anchorage Assembly, we have talked to, and they have been very helpful, and you know, I have nothing but admiration for people who spend so much time in the role of assembly members, but their plates are stacked a foot high with numerous issues that they have to decide. They do not have the time or the expertise to look at the data on cost justification that the RCA does. As far as local control goes, the utility and its management, along with its municipal budgeting, has all kinds of authority. They decide if a new main line is needed through South Anchorage. They decide what facilities to repair. Local needs like that are addressed exclusively by those bodies. But the RCA's area of authority is rate making, and they do it independently. Now, there's a great need for it, as illustrated by AWWU's four new requests for rate increases since the beginning of 2004. And a large percentage of that increase that the utility sought, and they're currently getting it, is to pay additional money right into the municipal's coffers as a payment in lieu of taxes. And when the RCA was asked to look at the fairness of that, they rejected that. They said it doesn't follow our precedents, it doesn't follow good utility policy, and currently that issue is on appeal. But look back and realize that AWWU's first effort to deregulate itself came just at the same time, about 3 years ago, that the city of Anchorage was attempting to put more money into its own pockets through this extra charge in the utility bills, which they don't come out and declare it to be a tax. They don't call it a tax. It's well hidden in the utility base, but it is a tax.
Ms. Rush, I'm gonna,
private
Ms. Rush, I'm sorry, we're just about out of time. Can I ask you to wrap up for now, and we're holding this bill over for further testimony and consideration. Did you have any wrap-up comments before we have to go?
Okay, the RCA has a process that is more responsive to consumers. It protects consumers in a way that the utility, that proposed procedure, even with two layers in-house that are not independent at all, proposes to do. Thank you very much for
okay.
your attention.
Ms. Rush, my apologies and the apologies of the committee for abbreviating your testimony. We will hold the bill over and have it before us again, and everyone will receive notice of that. Is there anything further to come before us before we go? Senator Stevens.
Just very briefly, since there's only two communities affected by this, we are considering exempting Anchorage. Could we get some response from Pelican? I mean, do they want to be the only community in the state of Alaska regulated by RCA? Maybe we could find out if they want to be exempted as well.
We will contact the Pelican, yes. Okay. Anything further to come before us? If not, thank you all for sticking with us. We will adjourn the meeting at 3:01.